It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 540 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week has been the release of Justice Warriors number 1 from Ahoy Comics. And in celebration, I have an interview with two of its creators. That includes cartoonist, publisher, and Pulitzer Prize finalist Matt Boers. And it also includes Ben Clarkson, acclaimed filmmaker and illustrator, whose art has been featured on Adult Swim, among other places. We talk about how the comic came to be, about how it's awesome and outrageous is the way that I think of it, and what we can expect from the series moving forward. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. There's a lot to get through in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Matt Boers, the founder of The Nib and a political cartoonist who has twice been named a Pulitzer Prize finalist. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. I'm good.
It's good to talk to you. And Ben Carson, an acclaimed filmmaker and illustrator whose art has been featured on Adult Swim and Vice Noisy, which I don't know anything about. And you have a book coming out called Justice Warriors. In fact, when this posts, the first issue will have already been released. So let's see. And Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Let me start off, Matt, talking with you. This is your first ever monthly comic book, right?
Yeah, which seems nuts to me because I always wanted to make one, but I just I guess I didn't get around to it until now.
Now let's see, you've done 18 years and 1,600 comics before this.
Yes, to political cartoons. So you know, 1 to 3 a week. I was doing 3 a week for a while and couldn't do anything else, and I slowly whittled down to 1, and then I went down to none, and now I'm doing Justice Warriors.
Okay. All right. So that's a good thing. Hopefully you start in comics for you. And let's see, Ben, this is the first ever comic book that you've done.
Yeah, I've never really done any comics or anything for publication before doing this project with Matt.
Okay. So, but you've made films.
Yes. Loads of films.
Okay. All right. So this is new territory for both of you, basically. So how did the concept come? I'm just curious then. I mean, was this something you both came up with together, Matt, or how did you do it?
Well, Ben had been working on it for a while before, so I can let him talk about that. But I'll just say that I came in 2020. He reached out to me to write for Justice Warriors as an animation, and I loved it. And we just had so many ideas. I mean, immediately we've got years worth of ideas for this as a series, as a comic book or an animated series. And, you know, we just settled on doing it as a comic. I love comics. I sort of, that's where my brain goes. And really we figured that this would it would be easier for it to exist and for us to get paid to create it as a comic book, which are already time intensive, as opposed to like an animated film or an animated series, which is even more time intensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. And Ben, how did this come to be?
It's been a long sort of bubbling process. It's been simmering in my brain for a long time. Originally it was Alien and Robot. Originally it was a story of like highway cops, and then it's just sort of like built up speed. It's been like a snowball rolling downhill, picking up all these elements that I kept sticking to it. over the years. And finally, I got to this breaking point where I just had to make it. It had been like simmering for honestly a decade. And I had to do something with this thing that I'd come up with. And that's when I started really trying to push it as an animated series and trying to figure out, how do you sell an animated series? What's that industry even look like? And I wanted other people to join me. And Matt was one of the people I reached out to and said, hey, stop, quit political cartooning, quit the thing you're most known for, and join a random guy on the internet in making a TV show, which never got off the ground. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing it as a comic, which
is
great, because it's so much easier as a comic than a TV show.
What's cool. And Ben, you got your assistant there helping you. We can hear.
Yeah. I have a little sick boy.
Oh.
Hopefully not going to make too much noise.
That's all right. We'll put up with it and get it all taken care of. It's a thing to do. So, okay, well, back to Matt then. As far as the characters go, I mean, there's two – well, it starts out with a – I don't know how much to give away and how much not to, but in the press release, though, there's some information that's given out. There's two, it ends up being two police officers, Swamp Cop, and how do you pronounce the other one's name?
Shit.
Okay, so it's not spelled the way we're used to that word, S-C-H-I-T-T, which makes this a name and not a curse word.
Exactly.
It's a traditional name. It's from his culture.
Now, the interesting thing about that character is he looks like the meme version of him there. And so I get a huge kick out of the fact that he looks like that. And I hope that's not trademarked anyway, because
you mean the poop emoji?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know, but you know, it's just a pile of poop, with eyes and a mouth. I don't think, you know, well, you can copyright that if it's a specific thing, right? Like shit is then copyrighted as a character, but I think you can draw, you can draw stuff like that. You know, the whole world is kind of populated with these types of characters that exist elsewhere, sort of, because they're like toons and mutants. So like in the background, you know, you'll notice a lot of, especially in issue 3, where there's giant crowds, you'll notice a lot of recognizable characters, let's say.
Okay, so I'm just curious as to his character. Mm-hmm. Who is this character? I mean, did you guys? I kind of figured that, but the thing I'm curious about is, what's this character? I mean, who? What's he like, as far as that goes?
He's the main thing about him is that he is the naive rookie. You know, we're starting off with the dynamic of Swamp Cop being the veteran who gets a new partner and has to kind of show him the ropes. So it's like a classic setup, except it's in this totally over the top world of Bubble City and the uninhabited zone. So that's the first thing about him. You know, he's going to get in trouble in the way that cops do in the real world, with be it violence or vice, but Swamp's got to show him how to do things the correct way so that you don't run afoul of their own laws. And you know, we'll learn a lot of things about him over the course of the series. I won't spoil too much. I'll say, you know, we'll be introduced to his wife later on.
Oh no. Oh my goodness. Okay.
She's a real looker.
Okay. All right, well, let me read the description of the book from the news release, which I found really interesting. And it says, Justice Warriors follows two police officers, Swamp Cop and Shit, stationed in the world's first perfect city. A bustling metropolis flourishes outside, inside the protective shell of Bubble City. It's a city of equality, diversity, and prosperity with no crime whatsoever. But outside of the bubble lies the uninhabited zone, the UZ, a densely populated and vast slum where the majority of the mutant population actually lives. And Let's see. This is right off the bat. Swamp's first partner is killed in the line of duty. He's run over by a self-driving bus. I hate when that happens. And the increasingly cynical Swamp Cop becomes obsessed with arresting or killing the bus as he begins to suffer PTSD. Haunted by hallucinations of his dead partner, Swamp Cop is determined to show the naive rookie that you can only police the UZ by bending every rule that's left. So I get a kick. It's called a irreverent dark comedy. And when I keep reading it, the only word I keep thinking of is awesome.
Great.
So it's so unlike anything else that I've read. And I just, parts of it make me laugh and parts of it are horrifying, but it's really interesting. When the bus hits the original partner, I went, oh, and I hate to spoil it. I know that we hope that people get to read it and enjoy it. It's a very startling experience when that happens.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it is a spoiler to people, but considering we drew that segment like 2 years ago as part of our pitch and have set it up as, you know, Swamp Cop and shit, it doesn't feel like a huge spoiler. But yes, it's the first 8 pages are sort of like a cold open with Swamp and his previous partner that sort of sets up the series.
Mm-hmm. And then he gets his partner and then things go from there. It's interesting because when you call him Swamp Cop, he looks like a fish to me on some levels. Is that what he's supposed to look like?
Yeah. He's a fish. He's a fish. He's like a swamp monster.
Yeah. Well, that's different from a fish to me, because that's sort of, I think he's more amphibian in nature.
Yeah, I guess so. He's sort of creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one of the things I enjoy is there's a quote from you, Ben, in the release that says, "Justice Warriors is a mega satire of the system we're stuck kicking at the walls of. Imagine, if you will, a mashup of The Wire, RoboCop, and The Simpsons' Itchy and Scratchy Show. This is a comic where the weatherman reports on the day's riot trajectory. The mayor uses a scheming cyborg rat advisor to juice his record sales, and the police chief is too busy posting memes to post the murder rate." So this has a lot of commentary on current things going on.
Yeah, it's exactly like our world.
I'm just kind of curious, because I've seen The Wire and RoboCop and Itchy and Scratchy Business, and that's an interesting mix.
Yeah, the Wire elements come from that it's not just a satire of cop shows. It's not just a gag cartoon. That we do like visit multiple different levels of this crazy society at different times and have different characters which are sort of cordoned off from one another but interact with one another through their decisions. And so we wanted to show how there's these mechanisms that feed back within society, like in The Wire, but then we wanted to do it more justice to how crazy our time is. So there's these insane choices. There's the prince, who's like a Machiavellian totalitarian ruler in the book, but he's also a complete self-obsessed, buffoonish, almost Kanye West character with a musical career that he's much more focused on. And his choices, which focus on his own ego, because all of his choices are focused on himself and his own ego and his own narcissistic pursuits, those choices feed back throughout the rest of society. One person is given way too much control over a large system and makes pretty arbitrary decisions, which reverberate down to the street level, which is where those questions and those problems meet the Justice Warriors.
Okay. I'm kind of curious as to why it's called Justice Warriors. Is that the name of the unit, or is this why is it called that?
Well, it hasn't. It's not an official name of the unit or anything. You know, there is the I think famous use of the word online, right, of social justice warriors, And this is sort of playing with that and casting the police as, you know, warriors for justice, which is certainly their image of themselves. And that concept comes up a lot in the series because they are faced with a lot of social unrest and rebellion, let's say, from the series antagonists, which are yet to be revealed. They're not in issue one. They sort of slowly emerge from all of the problems that are happening in the uninhabited zone. And so the cops, you know, really view themselves as warriors for good, whose society is dependent on them, or else it will, collapse and fall apart, and hysteria will and crime will run amok.
The thing I always really liked about the title, which is why it's gone through a couple titles. The thing that really stuck for me is that it sort of automatically asks the question, what's the difference between justice and social justice? Because we have these two different concepts that we walk around with, but we never sort of pitch them against each other. Hmm. Because ideally, wouldn't justice and social justice be the exact same thing?
Mm-hmm. Ideally. Okay, cause that's interesting. It's going to be interesting. Now, Matt, there's a quote from you that I'd love for you to elaborate on. It says, "Justice Warriors is the buddy cop parody we all need right now. It's a violent satire of police, inequality, and celebrity, but mostly it's about why nothing changes and how almost no one is a good guy." You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, I guess that comes from, you know, the idea that a lot of comics, particularly, are sort of about modeling good behavior, idyllic behavior, superhero stories. They're superhero stories of all kinds and deconstructed ones and satirical ones. But, you know, mostly that, along with other media, like, I don't know, name the corporate IP of your choice, you know, Star Wars, etc., is sort of about heroic narratives and identifying with characters and showing them doing good. And this is a little bit of a darker satire of a society that we, Ben and I, think we kind of live in. Obviously, it's a wildly contorted psychedelic interpretation of it. But I think to try to get at what I'm getting at under that quote is that, you know, the type of media I'm talking about shows that, you know, good people need to act good. And I think one of the things we are exploring in Justice Warriors is that things happen the way they do because of structural reasons.
Okay. All right. And we get to see some of that in this book, I bet.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So let's, Matt, while I'm talking to you, let me, there's a cover that you did and I got a kick out of it. It's the one with dialogue on it. And it shows this, I guess it's a mutant and he's got the first partner for Swamp on there. And he's saying something. He says, "Open the comic and the cop gets it."
Yeah. You know what? I'll admit that I was very pleased with myself for that one. I like a dialogue cover, and we've already said we're not spoiling too much. That Rogers, the character, he doesn't make it through the issue. So it is true that if you open the comic, the cop gets it.
Yeah, and that's a good point of it. Now that's the B cover. Ben, you did the other covers?
Yes, I'm the primary cover artist for the series.
Okay, because there's one in which...
Yeah, there's another Ben. Ben Passmore did the third cover for the issue one.
Okay, that's the one in which looks like a mutant is being shoved into a wall. Is that... That's the other Ben?
Yeah.
Okay. And you did the first one on there and then provided the art for most of the series on there. What was that like to work together? I mean, Matt, you being an artist and Ben being an artist, you got two artists. How did you divvy up the art duties or work along those lines? How did that happen?
Wrestling match. It was all decided through a wrestling match. Matt pinned me early, so he got to write. and then I had to do all the drawing. No, we work really well together. We go back and forth on basically every aspect of the book over and over and over again. We'll start with like a conversation for writing, because we also wrote the book entirely together. We'll have a conversation for writing and sort of figure out where it's going to go. Matt puts the sort of writer hat on, and I put the artist hat on, but we switch them back and forth. He'll go away, write a basic script, and then we start editing the script and going back and forth, adding jokes, taking jokes out, changing pages, changing B plots, moving the A plot around, taking a look at the overall structure of the six issues, because there is a pretty good arc throughout the whole thing, and all the little B plots that have arcs throughout the issues, and we polish that up, and then we'll go to layouts. And so I'll do basic panel design and posing, and then Matt will take those poses and even do drawovers of them. He'll take panel and page designs that he has better ideas for, and he'll do edits. We'll punch it up back and forth on layouts, and then I take it into pencils and into inks. And even at that point, we'll change panels, we'll change pages, we'll move things around, basically up until it gets shipped to the printer. Like, we just, right before this, we were texting about like a very small detail that should Matt cover it up while he's doing the lettering, because Matt does all the lettering work himself as well. So we go back and forth basically on every aspect of the book multiple times together.
Well, and I, I'm coming from the type of comics where I'm used to making them all myself and have, you know, so I learned how to color in Photoshop and I learned how to hand letter. And I'm not as used to the sort of monthly comic book production style where there's a letterer and a color and all that. I mean, it's great, especially with our colorist Felipe Sobrero, who's like doing an awesome job on the colors. And to produce this stuff in any reasonable amount of time, usually you need a couple people working on a book. But I like that we're close collaborators, that we're not just cordoning off, writing and art. I mean, Ben does all the art, but like he said, I'm throwing in ideas for layouts and stuff like that, which I think helps being a writer of comics. It's impossible for me to imagine writing comics without being able to draw them well. Many writers do, like a lot of good writers or big name writers don't seem like they can draw a lick. So that's okay for them. But I mean, just for me and understanding the mechanics of how comics works, I really like collaborating with someone.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing, because I've often questioned people, and a lot of time people who work in movies really do well in comics because they're used to thinking visually. And I think that's going to be helpful for you guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of panels where when I'm doing a pass on layouts or even an edit, we take dialogue out because we can show it. There's you really have to think about how much information you can transmit to the reader with a picture, and then also what are the limitations of what can be shown in one picture too, because it's very easy to write like, oh, you see down the barrel of the gun, but then you also see the gunman at the same time. Like, you can't see both those things at the same time. So there's real limitations with picture thinking. And I think Matt and I do really well on it because we're picture thinking like primitive men all the time.
Because I always get a kick when a writer has got it easy. All he has to do is say a building blew up. And then now it's up to the artist to actually make that look like something.
Yeah, and it's... It's
you know, there's a couple instances of this. I mean, this is there's the opening shot of panel of issue two. The first panel is a big panel that's half the page. It shows Bubble City real small, and then the uninhabited zone around it, which is an endless slum. And Ben had to draw that, which took him like something like 25 hours to do that one panel. Now, First of all, Ben made this problem for himself because he designed a world in which it's buildings and endless skyscrapers and endless slums everywhere. So there are constantly a ton of buildings in the background. But yeah, and then there's the, if you buy through issue 3, so you get to see the riot scenes that Ben drew.
Okay, that'd be cool. Now, Matt, according to the release, you have other things that you're doing. It says that Justice Warriors will be jam-packed with bonus material, including a monthly standalone one-page strip by Matt exploring the life of mutants in the UZ, and the standalone one-page mugshot in criminal history of a Perper victim arrested or killed in each issue, which will be illustrated by you. There are some other secret things coming, but we don't want to spoil because they should be experienced rather than talked about. So as far as this bonus material goes, you're actually generating that. You guys are working together on that, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's sort of a similar process where I'm writing stuff up and sending it to Ben and Tom Pyre, our editor at Ahoy. But, you know, there's just so much with this world that, like, we wanted people to get a feel for that with, like, bonus material that kind of helps build out the world. And honestly, I mean, I'm just like, I want to throw everything into Justice Warriors. Like, I'm a cartoonist too, so I want an excuse to draw stuff. And I want readers to feel like they're getting a lot for their buck. And just, it's a comic that's packed with, it's packed. You know, the first issue is like, I think the story's 24 pages, and then there's 2 issues of backup material. It's almost the entire comic book.
Wow, okay, that's great. As far as, like, because you guys said this was your first comic, how did each of you prepare to do a comic book? I mean, did you do some research into it? Who was the biggest comics fan of the bunch?
Matt, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been preparing for this moment my entire life.
How about you, Ben?
I didn't read comics until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I sort of decided, cause I want to make movies. I love movies. But I'm also very antisocial. I stay in my house a lot and I DM people on Twitter for anything I want, for any social interaction I might want. So it's not really easy to make a movie when you're doing it by yourself. I've learned this the hard way, trying to make films by myself, is that it really is a community art form. So I had sort of realized, oh, comics I can do by myself. Comics are a thing that doesn't require $150 million of investment. And if I make a really good one, Michael Bay will direct it. So I got all of those. What's that guy's name? He has the Understanding Comics books.
Scott McCloud.
I got all those Scott McCloud books and I read them and I was like, that makes sense. And then I got the Eisner sequential art books and I read those and I said, that makes sense. And then I just started making some comics for myself. I invented some characters and I just made them. My wife read them. She thought they were funny. And then that's basically as much prep as I did. And anything I haven't known, Tom and Matt have been sort of teaching me as I go on. And I've been sort of thinking more and more about the medium as I go on and how can I play with it and how can I have fun with the form of the page and the form of layouts, because it has, there's a bunch of specific technical and formal elements to comic making. And the more you mess with that and the more you have control over those elements, the more control you have over storytelling. And that's something I've been really trying to zero in on, is how do you push the medium while at the same time having great pages just for people to gawk at.
Because I like to say you have an unlimited special effects budget.
Yeah, it's pretty fun when you can have a helicopter crash into a cell phone tower and it takes less time than simple dialogue.
And then, of course, you've got talking heads. If you have dialogue pages, you've got to make them interesting visually as well as get the dialogue in there and make that all fit in the panels. So that's another aspect of comics that people – it looks natural when you look at the page, but the person who has to put it together has to really work at it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of crossover from animation there because in animation there's a big focus on posing characters. Because the pose tells the story of the motion, because the motion is an illusion. It's just individual drawings after one another. And so that's something I was really sensitive when I started doing this too, because animation is another one of these things where I was like, aha, I can draw and I want to make movies. I should put these things together. It took way longer for me to figure that out than I care to, say. I really resisted becoming an animator for a long time. And so there's a lot of posing and acting in animation. And so that's something that I found has transferred over to comics really easily.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a bit about the one character. How about Swamp Cop? What kind of a character is Swamp, as he's referred to? Who's the best one to answer that one? Is that better Ben for you or for Matt?
We can both talk. We both get different aspects of Swamp. I think about these characters a lot. Like sometimes I think that I'm shit and Matt is Swamp Cop, and like he's showing me the ropes of comics if I want to get like psychoanalytic about it. But he's like there's the old drain the swamp joke. He is the swamp. He's like completely installed in this police world, and he's absorbed it, he's soaked it in, and he swims in it, and he doesn't ask any questions about it, and because there's nothing that would make him ask any questions about it, and you get to see inside his psyche as the book goes on, and you get to deal with the very real psychological structures of his mind that make him a paranoid, ultra-violent freak. But at the same time, the thing I find really funny about showing his psychology is that it doesn't excuse him being a total freak for hurting people. Because I find in our society, we always have to like, oh, well, you know, he was dropped as a baby, so that explains why he's a murderer. What about all the people who are dropped as babies that don't become murderers? Like, that's not the cause of being a psycho. He's a funny character, and Matt and I dump garbage all over him constantly. He is just treated like crap throughout the book, and we revel in treating him like garbage.
Yeah, he will be physically and mentally put through the ringer for the entirety of the series.
Wow. Okay. So we get to understand better. Now, as I understand it too, that you're lettering it along the way too, right, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a thing with lettering. I like to do it, and I like, I feel strongly that it adds to the character of a book, and that a lot of mainstream lettering for comic books, mainstream and monthly comic books, they all really look the same. And I like to go for things that look like they're made by the hand of an artist, as opposed to, you know, being more mechanical and everything. So I designed a font. I mean, I'm not hand lettering the entire book, but I designed a font specifically for Justice Warriors. It's sort of based off of 90s action comics. You know, it'll look familiar to comics readers, but I think it's a little different than the way most comics are lettered today. And yeah, you know, I have a lot of fun doing sound effects or different balloon shapes for different characters, robots and stuff. So I love
it. Because
I just like being involved in every aspect of it. Like, I just love making comics.
Because lettering is one of those things, when it's done well, you almost don't notice it. But when it's not done well, it kind of stands out. So that's one of the things you have to be real careful of when you're lettering. So was that something you were conscious of in your lettering?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the creation of the font, you know, I mean, I think that the font and the speech bubbles are clear. I tried to go for some different styles throughout for like you know, computerized voices, and there's a character who's a hologram in issue 2, and I designed a specific speech bubble type for him. So, you know, I think it looks good, but I guess other people will have to, if they don't notice it, then I guess it's good. And if they notice it too much, maybe it's bad.
Well, it should evoke in our minds a sound, what that voice sounds like. Yeah. So I'm anxious to see how that works. So okay, that was good. Obviously, we spent a lot of time on that and getting those together. One thing is about being a letterer, too. If you write the script, if you come across something you change your mind on, when you get to the lettering, you always say, whoops, I think I'm going to change this right here. Did you have any time with that?
We've done it a few times. And I think if I wasn't lettering, we'd be doing another pass and, you know, maybe we'd catch some of this stuff. But, you know, I'll be laying it out and looking at the page and reading it 10 times, right, for copy edits and for flow and stuff. And I'll just be like, you know, this page starts and it needs like one more beat at the beginning, right? Like somebody has to say something to set it up. And we didn't do that in the script, but now it's clear that we have the finished art and the lettering. It just seems like it needs that, or, you know, very slight word changes will happen. So, you know, I'll do a few of those and just talk to Ben and Tom about them. And sometimes we're in need of a different turn of phrase and we come up with a bunch of ideas for something that sounds funnier or something like that. But yeah, it is a nice position to be in as a writer and letterer, of like getting one more opportunity to just like, you know, I try not to like overthink it and fiddle too much with it, but you get an opportunity to just sort of improve it one last time.
And we'll even update characters too, because we've gone back as we write the issues. We develop some of the side characters more throughout the issues, and then when we go back to the lettering of that character's first introduction, we'll say, "Ah, they don't talk like that. That's out of character." And so we'll rewrite their dialogue at the lettering phase.
Yep, that's the handy thing about having the letterer be part of the creative team. Just makes it easier to do that. Did that happen with the prince, the mayor, who's also a pop star? Did he evolve basically as he was going along?
I don't know. I think he's always been in there. He's just so much fun to write.
Yeah.
Like for me, the prince has been very natural. I have a very clear idea in my head of who the prince is. And it's based off of a couple influences, but then when I go and I look at those influences, I'm like, that's nothing like the prince. They got it all wrong. His tone has been like, for me, really spot on the whole time. He's very easy to write for me because he's just the most vapid person you could possibly imagine. And I like to think about what my life would be if I had absolutely no responsibilities. And that's what I try to channel into the prints.
All right. And according to the release, a new cyberpunk gang rises to prominence using social media, good vibes, and anti-bubble sentiment. I find that interesting. Of course, there's a commentary on social media there. Cyberpunk gang, is that kind of what the character looks like on that cover you drew, Matt? Is that one of the cyberpunk game?
Well, that is, you know, in the spirit of it. That character I drew is technically part of the starfish gang in the opening sequence with Rogers. The antagonists of the Justice Warrior series have not been revealed in the first issue. In fact, a couple key elements of the entire story aren't revealed until issue 2 and 3, because there's so much world building we have to do to even establish like this city and what the hell's going on. We didn't want to, it feels crammed in a good way, and we didn't want it to feel crammed in a bad way. But, a gang, that will rise up, you know, cyberpunk is a good word to describe it. A gang of mutants, in the Uz rises up on, good vibes and anti-police sentiment, as you said. The exact nature of that, I don't want to spoil, because I think it's really, really good element of of this world that we satirize, but it goes a lot of places. And once you see, I think the latter half of the series, issues 4 through 6, get absolutely crazy.
Well, you know, social media, a lot of people consider that sacrosanct, but to me, I see a lot of, it's a lot of opportunity for making fun of it, because, you know, just because you write something, and of course you can hide behind the internet, there's all this kind of ability for people to go in and poke fun at it. And I have a feeling we're going to see some of that in your book.
Oh yeah, read on. There's a social media is a huge component of this world and the plot line of this first volume, and we have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, the Uz is a very it's a hysterical place, and social media really lets that hysteria spread in real time.
Well, that's funny, because I pronounced it the UZ, but you call it Uz.
Yeah, it's the land of Uz.
Okay, so there's all going to be all kinds of fun things going on. Sometimes I wish there was a pronunciation guide in comics on how to pronounce names and things like that, because sometimes I'm left going, because I would have pronounced it Shiite or something like that.
Like the Shiite militia.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way that I look at it and stuff. I call it the submariner for the longest time instead of submariner.
Yeah. I think I did that too when I was a kid. Like submariner just sounds, who would want to adopt that as a name? I got to say.
Submariner's better.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I when somebody told me how it was really pronounced, I went, really? Couldn't believe it. So that's the thing.
His name is Namor, which I find also to be like, it's just the word name with, I don't know if there's an origin or what where the name
origin, Namor.
I think, you know, your name being Namor is a little bit strange to me. And then Submariner, I mean, that's two strikes for me.
Well, I always thought it was Roman backwards.
That's right. That's where it is from, actually, I think. Because Rob Liefeld, you know, he had a bunch of like kind of knockoff characters, like Glory was Wonder Woman and Supreme was Superman, and then he just made his underwater king guy Roman. It's like, I'll just switch it back.
Yep, because that's behind the scenes. See, little inside jokes like that I always find fun. I always enjoy that, and I expect we'll see some of that in your book going forward too. Anything else that you would like the fans to know about Justice Warriors?
It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I'll say Ben's work on the art is amazing. I think it's up there. Like, you know, this is his first comic, but it won't look like it. Like it's operating at a high level, and I hope that you know, we want to make more of these. We want to keep making them. It's a series that's designed for there to be a, you know, a mini series every year. For we have ideas for volumes 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 already. That are pretty well developed. So if you want to support, you know, a new independent comic series, this is one of them. We would love it if you bought it.
And especially one that doesn't shy away from the fun parts of comics, like people being mowed down by a helicopter gunship and you getting to like see the hands fly off, like it's a Paul Verhoeven movie. It's RoboCop. You get to watch RoboCop for the first time over and over again with what we're doing. It's hilarious. It's great. It's full of jokes and it's full of great characters. Very good art on the better pages. And I'm enjoying it. And if you don't buy it, I'll buy more copies.
That's a threat, I guess. Okay, now if people want to follow you guys on social media, Matt, how do they do that?
Matt Bors on pretty much all the major sites, MATTBORS, very easy to find.
Okay, and Ben, how about you?
Ben Clarkson on Twitter. That's basically the only one I use. Managing more than one would be very brain rotting.
Okay. Now, are there other projects you guys are working on that we need to be aware of?
No. Justice Warriors is it. I mean, I also run the Nib, but like Justice Warriors is where I'm putting my energy. I don't have enough time to work on multiple comics. I could conceivably, you know, write something else if I had more time. But Justice Warriors is it. I'm putting all my energy into it, and hopefully we get to make more of these.
Ben, how about you?
I got nothing I can talk about. Everything else is bound up with lawyers and good taste and not talking about it. But Justice Warriors really does take up like 60 hours a week right now. So it's all I can honestly say I'm working on.
So it's a labor of love.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. Okay. So that's great. So Justice Warriors issue one just came out, and it's a 6-issue miniseries right now. So how far ahead are you guys? Last question here.
I am penciling issue 5 right now. I'm on page 4 of issue 5.
Yeah, okay. We got writing issue 6, penciling issue 5, coloring issue 4, and I just finished the final copy edits on lettering for issue 2, and we'll start lettering for issue 3 as soon as I finish my cover for issue 5.
Okay, so you guys are busy with this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good job. Okay, that'll be good. Looks like it's going to be fun to read. So, again, it's Justice Warriors. It comes out from Ahoy Comics, and the first one is out. If your store doesn't have it, you might want to check with some other stores and see and make sure that your store orders the rest of them if they didn't get the first one. But it's a lot of fun. I got to read the first issue, and it's crazy stuff. So it'll be fun. It's just awesome and amazing. I've never seen a comic do this stuff before. So if you want to read something new and fresh, this is the place to go.
Well, hell yeah. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, man.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.